Welcome to this week's episode of The Shill Report, where journalism is reviewed and the stories of the week are expanded and explained. I'm your host, Ryan Ripley. Joining me on this quest to shed the light of liberty on the week's news is the publisher of We Are Libertarians, Chris Spangle.
Hello.
And managing editor of the We Are Libertarians news site, Joe Ruiz.
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey, guys. You know, between the royal babies, the wiener fever, the tampon earrings, and 70-year-olds taking half-nude selfies, I got to say it's been a pretty screwed-up news week. What do you guys think?
When you put it that way, yeah.
And then to top it all off, we have Glenn Beck being the only voice of reason, mocking the fools, and actually coming up with some decent news. It must be bizarro world.
I thought his selfie was even hotter.
I love the jacket and the towel, guys, and the condom.
He was in like layers, wasn't he? Hotter is probably a good word. I bet he was.
So given all that, you'd think it was a slow news week, but actually I think we've got some pretty compelling stories to talk about. However, before we jump into the stories of the week, we are doing a Shill Report first. We are bringing on our first guest, our inaugural guest to the Shill Report. We've invited Casey Hendrickson to join us. He is the he hosts his own show on 95.3 MNC. He is the afternoon drive host and is a, what would you say, Casey, a conservative talk show host in the Michiana area. Is that a fair tag?
Yeah, it's a fair tag.
Hey, well, we'd like to welcome you to the Shill Report, and why don't you tell us a little about yourself, Casey, and just your philosophy towards the media.
I appreciate it. Didn't know I was the first guest, so that's quite an honor. Thank you very much. I'm a self-proclaimed white guy. other than that, no, I've been in talk radio almost a decade now. I started off in Vegas and came here to Michiana and just been, you know, did morning show for about a year and moved to afternoons and was also doing some stuff in Fort Wayne, still do. So I describe myself as an authentic conservative, not this newfangled, perverted way of conservatism that a lot of these people are identifying with nowadays, especially politicians.
So, Casey, it seems like when a new conservative radio host comes along, they try to out-Limbaugh Rush Limbaugh, or they try to out-Beck Glenn Beck. And it seems like you've been able to stay, you know, unique. You know, what's your angle, what's your viewpoint? How have you managed to avoid that pitfall that so many of the conservative talk show hosts that they fall into?
As you pointed out, I mean, trying to be Rush or trying to be Sean or some of these other guys is the biggest mistake that people make. You know, I had a boss one time who said, just be yourself, just make it bigger. And that's pretty much the philosophy that I go by. You know, I'm a pretty even-keeled guy. I'm pretty quiet at home. But when I do say something, it's with authority. And so I just project that on the air for 3 hours. I'm totally spent, and my family gets absolutely nothing left. So that's about it.
I
do things differently than they do, too.
This is Chris Spangle. I actually produced the morning show here in Indianapolis for Abdul, and I worked in talk radio for 4 or 5 years, and I guest hosted a couple times. People don't realize how physically tough it can be to host a radio show, like to be up for 3 hours and just talk and think while you're talking at the same time.
Yeah, it's mentally taxing, obviously, but yeah, it really is physically tiring, and it sounds a little weird to say that, but it really is. And, you know, we used to do a thing in Vegas called Radio Star. We bring people in. We thought they could be a radio host. They're always sending you stuff like, you should do your show on this. And, of course, you know, my response is always, well, when you have a top-rated radio show, you can come back to me, but until then, shut up. And so these people would come in and they would try an audition, and it's a 2-minute audition, and they usually can't get past 35 to 45 seconds. They basically just blow through everything, and then they don't know what to say. So there's an art, there's a craft to it, but you do get really tired. I left today, I had a pounding headache, and part of that was some of the interviews that I had today, but also it's physically taxing as well as mentally.
Guys, I think he's on to us. We're only a few minutes in, and I think we're already out of material.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. How do you know? To fill those 3 hours? I mean, how do you get your material?
I've actually been kind of known in the industry. If you look at some of the industry trades for a while, for my show prep, I do things a little differently. I've created a system that nobody else has. There's actually some talk about me doing my own show prep service for other radio hosts this year. So I'm going to work on that. All depends on if I can get the money together and the infrastructure to do it. But there's, you know, Talkers Magazine wants me to do it and a couple of others. Most people get their prep, you know, talk show hosts on the conservative or Republican side tend to get their show prep from a couple of different places if they don't have interns themselves that are doing the prep for them. Everybody goes to Drudge Report. Everybody goes to Fox News. Everybody looks at the New York Times to try and find the alternate angle, if you will. But the RNC sends out talking points every single day, and a lot of these guys that you hear on radio, they just parrot what the talking points are from the RNC, and maybe they'll have their people look at the RNC report early in the morning. Usually comes out, I think, about 4, 4:30, and then find articles devoted to all of those things that support the talking points. I don't do that. Last I checked, my show prep feed has about 118 sources in it, and about 90-some-odd are checked every day.
So, Casey, let's dig into one of those interviews that you were talking about that has left you with a pounding headache, and that's the interview that you did today with Second Congressional District Congresswoman Jackie Walorski.
Yeah,
I was actually able to listen in today, and we're going to jump into some of the Amash content and some of that later on. What I wanted to ask you, though, is that when you have something of a heated interview like that, you obviously have to have boundaries in place. And so how do you stay true to your principles? How do you stay consistent with your philosophies and also respect those boundaries that I think have to be shown to power? You know, it's a tightrope act, and what's your philosophy behind that?
Well, a lot of listeners, and this is something that has to be addressed, a lot of listeners want you to nuke somebody if they do something you don't like. And it's no secret, Jackie and I are friendly on a regular basis, you know, and while I don't agree with everything that she votes on, and the Amash Amendment was clearly one of them, I try to be respectful, but I also try to be direct, forceful on the facts, my opinion of it. When it devolves is when you start getting into, you know, calling other people names, that sort of thing. And with her and I, and she kind of flirted with it, but, you know, she made it seem like she was talking about the other talking heads that were on television and things of that nature, but she didn't directly call me a name, I didn't directly call her any names, and so at the end of the day, I think we're still going to be friends on, you know, well, I don't want to say friends, friendly, at the end of the day, but, you know, it's, you have to be direct, and this is one of the big issues, I think, with talk radio. When people first get involved in politics in general, things will make them really, really mad. And they can't maintain their composure, and it's important for you to maintain your composure. And if you don't learn that, I don't think you're going to be an effective interviewer, and you're not going to be able to do this. The only time I've really lost my cool on somebody was Harry Reid.
Okay, please tell.
Yeah, that sounds like an excellent story.
Yeah, it went national, so Breitbart picked it up, Drudge picked it up. It was a few years back.
Wow, so he's obviously an interesting person to tangle up with. Now, as far as your interview with Jackie today, it seemed to get a little heated, but it didn't seem like it ended badly. Did you get any feedback afterwards? I mean, do you know that whether or not you've nuked her? Because I'm sure one of the concerns is that serving the Michiana area, access to Jackie is important. I think your listener base really wants to hear from her on a regular basis, just like over here where, you know, the local station always has Marlon Stutzman on, and and so he's a weekly fixture, and I'm sure Jackie's also a regular fixture, and so I'm sure that's the concern there. Do you know if you nuked it today, or how do you think that's going to play out?
You mean from her people, or?
Sure, from anyone. Just curious if there's any follow-up or any feedback from that.
Yeah, from her people, exchange. No. No, everything seems to be okay with her people, and I know several people in her office, so I haven't heard anything that way. We do one hit with her a month. And I fully expect those to go forward because we disagreed, but it was still, like I said, it was amicable. It wasn't disrespectful.
Right.
And, you know, we've had other scenarios with other people that still will not come on my show because of things that happened from previous hosts who were on the station. And, you know, from the aspect of Jackie's people, I don't think there's a problem. There's a lot of listeners really upset with the way that she handled it. And so she's lost some votes right now. Whether she can win them back with future legislation is something that remains to be seen. And then there was two people that defended her and kind of went after me. And I actually know those two individuals too, and I'm sure there won't be an issue with them either.
So for those who are curious about this exchange that we're teasing about, Casey, you actually have a website. I believe it's theburningtruth.us. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah.
And so I noticed that you went ahead and you podcasted that that exchange. And
right.
For the listeners out there, definitely go and check out Casey's site. A lot of his show prep material that he talked about is out there. podcasts and snippets from his radio show are out there. Excellent content and excellent site. Of course, please visit it after visiting the WeAreLibertarians.com website. We have a link directly to it. So as soon as you're done reading the latest pieces from Joe, myself, and Chris and the rest of the crew, click that link on the right-hand side to theburningtruth.us and check out Casey's wonderful content.
Now, hey, Ryan, and aside from that, Casey is also a small business owner now, so let him plug Agamemnon Self-Defense as well.
You know, I wanted to ask you about that, Casey, because I actually, you know, these guys are going to make fun of me a little bit, but I was incredibly impressed with the way that you handled Congresswoman Walorski, and I decided I am going to make a purchase from your site.
Oh, cool.
A lot of it's self-defense materials. What can you recommend to me as far as what's your favorite piece of equipment out there? What's your favorite toy that you think every guy should have?
Oh, that every guy should have? I got to go with the belt knife. The belt knife is the best. Yeah, the hidden belt buckle knife. I'm actually wearing mine right now.
So, Joe, don't get out of line, buddy.
No. Exactly. It's effective if you ever need it. But, you know, the biggest thing is it's just got a major cool factor to it, so you can pull it out. The one comment that everybody always makes about it, I don't know if you're a knife guy, I am, is that the blade is a lot more sturdy on the belt knife than most people would have expected. So if you find it, you sharpen it just a little bit more. It comes pretty sharp, but most stuff ships a little duller than it should be, and you can go and sharpen it up. But if I were going to do one thing just for the cool factor for guys, that would be it, at least until next week.
So
I didn't know I was sitting next to Batman, for the record.
So I take it you're not going to give us an exclusive on what's coming out. However...
Oh, I can tell you.
Oh, let's hear it. What toy do you got coming?
Well, Agamemnon Self-Defense, more commonly known as ASD, is starting ASD Tactical. It's going to be starting next week. We just signed a contract with a group in Tel Aviv, Israel, and they're a group of former IDF soldiers, some of them special forces. And they've got some really good, unique designs, everything from turning your normal Glock pistol into a submachine gun to, you know, some hidden self-defense stuff and hats, things of that nature, as well as some specifically IDF-designed knives that were just for the Israeli Defense Force, and they have some of those things. So there's a lot of really cool stuff coming out. If you own, you know, any kind of the aggressively styled hunting rifle, that would be the AR-15s, AK-47s. Really cool accessories for that, recoil reduction stuff for your sidearm. Some cool stuff coming out.
Very cool. And then let's say that I'm done shopping for myself, and I want to make sure my wife is safe. What's the best self-defense piece that you have for the ladies out there?
Well, I carry a lot of pepper spray. I can get stun guns and tasers and things like that. You got to check your local laws with those things. I got a couple of popular ones. It all really depends on if she wants it concealed and that sort of thing. The Mace Key Guard is a really good one. It's tiny. It's about 2.5, maybe 3 inches. It fits on a keychain, but it's refillable, and it's got pepper spray in it. And it's 10%, so it'll work in Michigan because Michigan doesn't believe in self-defense. But honestly, the Mace pepper gun, it's bigger, and it's basically the size of a small firearm, but it's really intuitive, and it's really cool. I mean, you pull it out. My sister-in-law carries one. And it fires just like a gun, looks like a gun, really easy to load and unload. Yeah, practice cartridges that come with it. So it's a very interesting tool, that's for sure.
So, Chris, you are our radio former you know, stand-in host and extraordinaire. I know you got a few questions for Casey. You're going to compare the Indianapolis scene to the Michiana. Why don't you fire away and let's dig in more into the media side of what Casey does.
Yeah, I, you know, talk radio is an interesting animal because it is fact-based and you're giving news, but you're also an entertainer and you're trying to balance all of that. I mean, how have you developed your boundaries over time, and how do you kind of balance the, you know, we saw Jack Hunter get in trouble with this, being a little hyperbolic and inflammatory and trying to be provocative, along with giving information that people need when they go to the ballot box.
Well, and the other, the tag question is, do you own any Confederate flag wrestling masks? and if so, do not wear it.
No, I do not. I think it's a good question too, because I think the number one mistake that, you know, radio hosts make, and there's a lot of people that are in this field that are not very good at what they do. They're very smart. They can find information. They can explain it. They're just boring. And you can be the smartest guy in the room. If nobody wants to listen to you, it becomes kind of irrelevant in the moot point at that stage. So I'm really sarcastic in general, and I try to add that. But I also have always embraced kind of the mythical dark side of conservatism. And so let's play like we're Darth Vader and the Stormtroopers and things like that. Yeah, I kicked two puppies on my way into work today. It was fun. You know, do stuff like that. And eventually, sometimes it can be a little shocking when you go into a new market, but eventually people will pick up that you're being sarcastic, you're not being serious about it. I had a running gag in Vegas about rounding up the homeless, grinding them up, and using them to fill in potholes. And, you know, only new listeners get really offended by that. Most people understand it's a joke, and I'm not serious about it. But
did that
just have some fun with it.
Did that get media coverage?
Said, make it big. That's kind of the biggest thing is make it big.
Did that get media coverage? Because I remember hearing that line of thinking of grounding up homeless people and filling them with potholes. I feel like that
if it did, I don't remember.
Yeah.
It might have. I don't know.
Our buddy Greg Lenz from We Are Libertarians is here hanging out tonight, and he has a question for you, Casey. Go ahead, Greg.
Do you prefer to set the agenda instead of, you know, having the talking points, or do you see it as more of a role of getting the talking points and giving a fresh perspective on them, but not necessarily changing the focus of the Conservative Party?
For me, I don't get talking points. I mean, the RNC tries to send them to me. I usually just send them automatically to spam. I believe what I believe, and that typically doesn't line up with the Republican Party. Doesn't line up with the Democrats, obviously. And, you know, I try to use historical reference to justify why I believe the way that I believe. I think some people had some questions about that until they heard the interview with Jackie today that they thought I might be a lockstep sort of person. I'm not a Republican. I left the Republican Party a long time ago. So if I agree with somebody, whether they're left, right, center, doesn't matter, I'll tell you, and I'll explain why I believe that. So I try to stay away from the whole talking point thing. But I'll look at them because sometimes the talking points actually have some valid points in them, but sometimes they don't.
Where did you develop your philosophy? I mean, what are the things that you studied and read and watched that help you develop your philosophy?
I grew up, about half of my family was liberal. The other half was conservative. And then I had a couple of moderates kind of floating around. So I had a really mixed family upbringing. And what I ended up noticing is the older I got, the more I was driven to join the military. I focused on who I felt was assisting and supporting the military the best. And that typically would lead toward the Republican Party for the most part. And then I just started noticing the debates going back and forth between the relatives and who just happened to seem the most correct. And it tended to be the conservative side. And then I started researching the Federalist Papers, obviously the Constitution, the Declaration, things of that nature. And I started, saying, okay, I'm more of a conservatarian, like a libertarian conservative hybrid, if you will. And then as the years went on, and the more I would look into it, it would actually be, no, it's actually authentic conservatism. It's really not a hybrid of two beliefs. And I think the modern libertarian movement is branched off from that authentic conservatism, which, they've had to rebrand now because the conservative movement has been perverted by neoconservatives, which are biblically based conservatives, that the Constitution is important, but it takes a backseat to the Bible. And a lot of the legislation out of the Republican Party coming back the past 40 years or so has been that neoconservative bent. And it's, we believe in limited government, that sort of thing, until it comes to something that might offend our religion. And so we can come in and mess with you there. But really just kind of just my experience. And I've always been I've been a popular guy, but I've always been kind of a loner, never really wanted to be around other people. And so kind of nomadic, if you will. And so I just always kind of had my own little streak of doing things.
Sounds like sitting in a room and talking to yourself is the absolute perfect job for you.
Exactly.
How would you differentiate your philosophy from what would be the mainstream libertarian philosophy?
Well, I mean, typically with mainstream libertarian, I'm probably more willing to go into other countries militarily than the average libertarian probably is. Although I have some pretty good boundaries in place on that. I don't think we should go everywhere all the time. But in my time in the military probably has a big influence on that. But at the same time, you don't do it if you're war weary, like I think we are right now, or if the local population isn't really willing to accept you. And I think we've made a couple of mistakes in doing that in the past. And while it has been to good, great good for a lot of people, it doesn't necessarily mean it's the right thing to do for your people. And your people have to be the primary concern. But typically, I would say that that's probably the biggest void, if you will, between the typical libertarian that you'll run into is that I'm probably more willing to be an interventionalist than they are.
So, Casey, did I just hear you right that you did serve in the military?
Yeah, I was in the Army.
Great. Just want to thank you for your service. That's always love talking to veterans and can't thank you enough for doing what you did.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thanks.
What would you say the biggest misconceptions that people have about talk radio shows hosts are?
That we're rich. I can't count how many times I get that. Oh, you're probably driving your Lamborghini. I wish, you know, I had to sell my Mustang last year for money, but yeah, well, there's a lot of misconceptions. One is that we get our marching orders from somebody every day. Like Karl Rove calls me up every day and tells me what I'm going to say, what I'm not going to say, or the more fringe people are probably thinking that we're, you know, members of the Illuminati or something like that. And that's not always the case, although I am being recruited by the Masons for some strange reason. But
that's just Boy Scouts for grown-ups.
Yeah, it's we'll see. But there's, you know, the misconception that we're lying intentionally to go ahead and push a political point, or that we're always going to support a Republican over a Democrat, or that sort of thing. And that might be true for a lot of the guys, don't get me wrong, Hannity. But it's not going to be true for the rest of us.
What is probably the most, other than the paycheck, because trust me, there's a reason I'm in advertising now and not radio. We've built the podcasts and the network to kind of feed, I started it to feed my own need to talk and make people hear it. But the paycheck, it weeds people out because it's a tough business. You're traveling, you know, every 3 years to a different market for 30 years, you know, if you're a producer like I was, you're lucky to make 30 grand at the end of 30 years. Because it's a tough business. It's changed, you know, since I started 10 years ago, there's almost no jobs in radio now. I mean, what do you think the future of talk radio is?
Well, as far as terrestrial radio, I've actually spoken about this at a couple of industry forums, and I honestly believe that terrestrial radio is their biggest competitor. It's not satellite. Forget about satellite. Satellite's almost irrelevant right now. It's going to be the internet. And we have more and more vehicles that are being produced with internet-ready cars, and they're able to connect to the internet as long as the internet is available. And these are going to be the biggest competitors. Pandora's looking at putting together a whole talk radio thing. We just heard that there's another service that's going to be doing that too. So we're going to see iHeartRadio is adding a ton of talk right now because it's cheaper to do it. It's more expensive for a station to do talk radio than music, but for the internet, it is much cheaper to do talk radio than it is to do music because of royalties. So there may be a situation where a radio host get together and try to get a royalty thing going. I don't know, but I haven't heard anything about that. But I really see it getting hyper-local with a few national guys and beaming into your car, beaming into your iPods and things like that. And people are going to have a lot of competition coming up relatively soon. So the audience may grow, but your individual audience may actually decline if you can't keep pace.
So what do you think the future of broadcast is? Before we move on here, what do you think the future of broadcast is? And, you know, a final thought for listeners, because this audience is for Savia Media folks. So the future of broadcast, and, you know, what would you tell people when they're consuming media?
And now, Casey, you know, if you don't say podcasting, you're going to break Chris's heart, right?
Well, and podcasting is very important, and there's an extra element to that with technology that's being developed. My company is actually, not my personal company, but the company I work for, is pioneering some of this stuff. It's going to be on demand. You're not going to have to listen to an entire radio program to get maybe the half an hour that you want. You can call it podcast if you will. It'll probably be called something different at that time, but it's pretty much the same premise. And that's going to be, I think, really very popular. And I kind of do that with the way that I do my podcast now. You know, I'll have my premium service so they can listen to the entire show if they want. But then there's individual segments that somebody might really want to listen to. So I just put that up there as a podcast. But this is all going to be done almost seamlessly through an app, whether it be on your television, your computer, your phone, maybe even your iPod, however the technology goes in that day, but it's going to be on demand radio, I believe. And so you're going to be more stressed, if you will, to put together good, compelling segments that individuals are going to want to listen to. Cause I think they're going to go from watching or listening to an entire show to listening to chapters of your show. That
so
makes
Casey,
sense.
Casey, would it be right to say that in the future we're going to consume talk radio the same way that we consume, I guess, television and movies from Netflix? Is that kind of the model that you see it moving
pretty
towards?
Pretty close. Yeah, pretty close. And, you know, and think about it this way. Like, if you have a Netflix show, let's say it's sketch comedy and there's three sketches, but you only want to see one. And so you just click, you know, I'll go forward one chapter, I'll just watch this one thing, then I'll move on to another episode. I think it's going to be more like that, but in an on-demand sort of setting, kind of like a Netflix or a Hulu or something of that nature.
Finally.
Well, that's pretty exciting. Hopefully yeah. that...
It's pretty cool.
Know, it sounds like you're well-positioned for it. It seems like the way that we do the podcast here at We Are Libertarians Radio, it sounds like that a lot of us could be well-positioned for that kind of future. It would be neat.
You heard the thing about the
chapter. Media.
So make sure that we're stealing that idea and being innovators, boys.
Greg and I actually turned off my microphone and I started talking with Greg about it, and it's like, how can we steal that for We Are Libertarians? Casey,
exactly.
as
very cool concept.
What would you tell folks when they're consuming media? What should they keep in mind when they're reading, watching, streaming any type of media?
Or even, well, Casey, when the people are listening to you, yeah. How would you like your listeners to treat what you're saying? It, on top of Chris's question, how do you want them to interact and to consume the things that are coming from you?
I think the biggest problem with information consumption right now is a lot of people don't cite their sources. This becomes a huge factor when you're looking at message forums, certain blogs, and things of that nature. Just don't cite their sources. They just say something as if it were a fact when it isn't. So when you're first thing you got to understand is when you watch the news, they're getting it from the AP Newswire, and some unpaid intern is plugging it into the teleprompter for the newscaster to read. So most of the stuff that you're getting is unvetted.
So
it's,
is that how
really just coming from the Associated Press?
So is that how we
go
get
ahead.
You know, names of pilots that are something wrong, and is that how we end up with those kind of mistakes?
Yeah.
Sorry, I couldn't
yeah,
resist.
Yeah, I mean, you guys have seen the videos on YouTube too, where there's some conspiracy theorists going, look, they're conspiring against you, and they play like 10 newscasts, and they have the same exact verbiage when they're opening their newscast. It's not a conspiracy, it's laziness. They're getting their information from a news wire service, they're plugging it in because it's already written, and so, you know, the AP will go, hey, we had a plane crash today, unfortunate tragedy today, 14 people dead, plane crash. You'll have hundreds of news agencies across the country that will repeat that verbatim as opposed to writing their own intro. And it's not a sinister plot, if you will, it's just laziness. And that's become a major problem when we live, you know, in the information age is not just misinformation, but disinformation. It's so easy to tell somebody something that's not true. That's one of the reasons I do the daily show prep. I have links to everything that I talk about during that day's show. Go find them, track it down, take everything that I've said with a grain of salt, and do your own research, and I tell you how to do that. A lot of guys don't, because a lot of guys don't know where they got the information from. They got it from a buddy who got an email somewhere that Snopes had already disproven 3 years ago.
So, ladies and gentlemen, you hear it from Joe, Chris, and I, and now you're hearing it from another radio, from an actual radio professional, that check everything, question everything, do your own research, look for sources. It's exactly what we promote here, and it's great to hear that message reaffirmed. You know, at this point, Casey, we'd love to thank you for joining us. We're going to jump into some topics. You are absolutely more than welcome to stay with us, crack wise, and help us expand the news. But
he's going to chime
in. I'll chime in.
In the last few seconds here, if you just want to plug your sites again real quick, and we'll also be sure to get them at the end of the pod as well.
Yeah, the website is theburningtruth.us. If you click the store button, that'll take you to Agamemnon Self-Defense. I'm working on getting my own domain for it. One-man operation right now. But again, theburningtruth.us, not .com, .us.
And that site, again, folks, is linked off of the wearelibertarians.com webpage. So the topic we're going to jump into is actually one that gave Casey a pounding headache earlier today, and that is the Amash Amendment coverage. And so while we're not going to necessarily jump into the details of, you know, Section 215 of the Patriot Act and how what the reps did and didn't do, and what the problems are. What I'd like to do is pose a premise to all of you and see if this plays out true. So my feeling is that I want to know where the domestic coverage of the Amash Amendment went. I think, and I'm going to propose this to you guys, that once the White House came out in opposition and completely defamed Rep. Amash and spoke against this bill, or this amendment, I'm sorry, that the coverage completely dried up. And so once the White House memo came out saying that this amendment is bad, do not pass it, CNN was fixated on the royal birth, Fox News could not find enough sexual innuendos to describe the Wiener affair, and MSNBC dropped the race card like it's going out of style on every single story. On no pieces of mainstream media could you find anything about Amash after the White House came out, and I think they chilled the discussion. What do you guys think? That's my premise. I want to hear you guys tear it up.
I would say I listened to Justin Amash on the Glenn Beck radio show yesterday, I believe he was on, and Beck kind of took him to task and said, you know, why didn't we know about this? We would have promoted the heck out of this had we known. And Amash said, well, we made a conscious decision not to really promote it while we've been planning it over the last month because we didn't want to tip our hand to anybody. We didn't want there to be a mobilization. We kind of wanted it to we wanted the surprise while we were working on it behind the scenes, which, you know, when you're trying to defund a spying agency, generally you're not probably going to be able to surprise them, I would imagine.
You know what, Spangle? I'm glad you brought this up. Why don't we go ahead and play this clip for the listeners? Let's let them hear what Beck had to say to Congressman Amash.
Can I ask you, Congressman, for a favor?
Sure.
And you know, please know that I ask you as I'm blaming this on me, not on you. But when there is a vote coming up like this, let us know in advance, because
I don't think anybody had heard of this.
We would have supported this crazy. How long has this been in the works, and how did we miss it?
Well, we knew it was coming up. I tried to get the word out, but for a while, you know, our office and maybe a few other offices were the only ones who were really talking about this. I told my staff maybe a month ago to be ready for the DOD appropriations bill, the Department of Defense appropriations bill, because the NSA is funded under the Department of Defense. So we've been preparing, but we didn't want to, I guess, show our hand at the time. And we wanted to be ready with good language before we started the whole debate. You know, at the end of the day, we pushed hard to try to get the word out, but a lot of the mainstream media, so-called mainstream media, doesn't cover this stuff.
Okay, well, would you do me a favor? I'm going to put you on hold when we're finished, and I want to make sure that you have my direct email address and everything else. We will cover these things.
Yeah, so Glenn Beck goes on, and they talk about how Amash didn't really put this out there because he wanted to kind of prepare in silence, you know, and not be hassled too much. And then he tried to put out the word through his networks, which his networks are great if you're trying to get the message out in the libertarian world, and there aren't many libertarian congressmen, so they had to do a lot of persuasion at the last minute, which may or may not be a technical failure, but I think that's why it didn't get a lot of coverage, is because you have to kind of warm up the press a little bit, and you have to build some of those relationships, and who knows how many relationships Amash has with, you know, Dana Bash at CNN and some other places to kind of get reaction. So I'm actually surprised that it got any coverage on, you know, what coverage it did get.
So Casey, Joe, the duo over in South Bend, do you see any merit to my premise, or is it just a matter of Amash held the cards too tight and perhaps became a victim of his own secrecy?
Well, I've been pretty tied up just the last couple of days, but I, you know, and Casey's been my coverage, so I haven't been able to see what the other guys are talking about. Although I can imagine that the Amash company, the campaign, his offices, whatever you want to call it, they've had a pretty busy couple of days, because I'll tell you, after Casey talked to Jackie Walorski today, I called both of his Michigan offices and also his D.C. office to try and tap into his public ledger and see if the meeting that she and him supposedly had actually took place to discuss the amendment. I wanted that verified. And the D.C. office was closed. Apparently, it kept going straight to voicemail. Nobody was answering, but neither Michigan office had access to his ledger, and they couldn't tell. So, but Casey, with his work and having to research it for a living, he might know a little bit more.
Well, there's actually a couple of different things. And when I talked to Jackie today, it was only because I spent an hour bashing her yesterday and the vote. And I think your premise is half right, because he certainly did. You know, when the president came out, the media is not going to cover it. But there was another element, too, not just him trying to keep it a secret. Remember, the Nugent Amendment was basically created by Boehner and the GOP heads because they did not want the Amash Amendment to pass. And the people that I have in D.C. are telling me that the Republican Party was scrambling at the top to come up with something that would allow Republicans to save face in an NSA scandal without having to actually vote for the Amash Amendment. So there's a little bit of, yeah, he's probably right, because had he come out earlier, I mean, he was very close to winning this vote. Had he come out earlier, there probably would have been a lot more motivation and a lot more information to get out there and counter him. But instead, they had to throw something together real quick. And as most people should know, the Nugent Amendment's a red herring. It's just reciting language that was already in Section 702 anyway. So he comes out. He has this thing. The Republican parties are now the Republican Party is now scrambling to go ahead and do something to keep it from passing. And they did, but just barely. So I think his premise was right. I think you're right, too, that the media is just not going to cover something like that once the president comes out. And, yeah, probably more focused on the more scintillating scandals, if you will, out there. But and at the same time, there's not a lot of talk show hosts who covered it either over the past couple of days, because they're getting their marching orders from the RNC, too.
And that's a very fair point. And this is one of those times, and we've talked about this before, where it seemed like that the only way to get coverage on this important topic was to, again, seek refuge with The Guardian. You know, it seems like anything that has to do with the security of the United States is covered the best by a British newspaper.
Yeah.
And that's a very staggering statement, but I think it's actually true. We do have to give a little bit of credit to the Huffington Post. It does seem like they were interested in reporting on, you know, specifically the meetings that General Alexander, the last-minute meetings that he was holding with, you know, select members of Congress, and they were also pretty good about reporting on just the general state of the amendment. But again, it's Glenn Greenwald and his crew of security journalists with The Guardian that really were only the ones interested in reporting. And it could be that, you know, the White House press machine is just, you know, Britain is out of their grasp. And I, you know, what do you think, guys, as far as The Guardian, again, taking the lead on the media and really embarrassing much of the American press?
It's exciting to see that they're not covering the royal baby.
Well, I mean, if you
The Guardian, I mean, actually, The Guardian implemented a way to hide all royal baby news on The Guardian website. They were very anti-royal baby coverage, which, hey, I didn't like the Zimmerman stuff, but who doesn't love a baby? At least we're not monetizing tragedy, okay?
Yeah, you know, guys, I'm fairly certain that, you know, the baby story is great. Babies are cute and all. I just imagine the royal family is happy that it's finally an infant rolling around naked yelling like a madman instead of Prince Harry. But in any case,
on The Guardian,
you know, there was a
on The Guardian and the American press, you know, I've always, if you want any kind of international news whatsoever, you go out to, you know, I guess the BBC, but you go out to foreign agencies, because you're not really going to get world news of any, you know, everything in America is so American-centric. And it is kind of disconcerting that now to get good American news, you've got to go to foreign sources as well. I mean, I wouldn't say Russia Today, because they're a propaganda machine, but you go to British newspapers, The Guardian. I just think that people like The Guardian are unafraid to hire journalists like Glenn Greenwald who are unafraid of speaking the truth.
But there's also something to say there as well. Glenn Greenwald lives in Brazil, and I would be tempted to wager, and maybe one of you guys would call me nuts for this, but I would be tempted to wager that if Glenn Greenwald were living in the United States, which is his home country, he could possibly be under arrest or in some serious or under some serious pressure right now. And the fact that he is in Brazil is actually enabling him to continue his activities. Am I crazy or is this close?
No,
oh, you're close.
No, actually, go ahead, Casey.
No, I was going to say he's already said that he's been threatened by American government officials. And the argument is that the reporter is just as guilty as whoever leaks the information for putting classified information out, which, of course, Eric Holder told us that he wouldn't do, but in the back room he actually would do. And I, you know, The Guardian, traditionally, I don't like The Guardian, but they've been really good on this issue. And I've been saying for a long time the best American news outlet is the Daily Mail in the UK.
Glenn Greenwald lives in Brazil for a very actually, Greg knows why he lives in Brazil.
It's because of gay marriage. He's homosexual. And I wouldn't say that you'd be out of line, you know, saying he'd be arrested. I mean, I would even go to the point he might show up in a suspicious car wreck.
Yeah, let's say that someone were tampering with a car's ability to drive and it burned like thermite. But that would never happen.
Not here.
And of course, we're referring to the Michael Hastings, what I have labeled as murder on this podcast, and I am 100% convinced, and I'm still convinced to this point, that Hastings was offed for a story that he was working on, and I believe, and I think the guys here all concur, that if Glenn Greenwald were in the U.S., he might find himself the fate of a similar incident.
It is kind of interesting how usually an accident investigation will take a lot longer than that one when they came out with a conclusion.
Yeah, it seems like they showed up, oh, he's dead, okay, let's cremate him, all right, we're done. And instead of a long, drawn-out discussion, it's just one of those where it was too quick, too convenient, with a lot of shady details, such as Michael Hastings feeding his last story to his lawyer and taking a ton of precautions to protect his wife. And when those kind of facts pop up, it just leads to way too many questions. And when the, as you said, Casey, when the proceedings are way too fast, it just gives all of us too much ammo to ignore.
Now, Ryan, yeah, Don't be crazy in front of our guest.
Sorry. So I think we all agree there was quite a bit of meat on this bone. And we're not pivoting back to Wiener. We're talking about the Amash Amendment story that, we've talked about a number of issues already. The exchange with Jackie, it was security over liberty and all of these great narratives, you know, whether it's General Alexander holding top secret classified meetings to sway votes, or even if you look at the We Are Libertarians website, the Nancy Pelosi angle, where Pelosi actually teamed up with quite a few established Republicans to help assassinate this bill or this amendment. You know, there's all these fascinating narratives. They all got left behind, and I think there's been some mixed discussion, but overall I think we've agreed, at least in part, that the White House definitely iced the media, and that should be something that all of you should be thinking about as you watch your news. Is the story you're watching one that should be told, or is it one that others have been forced to tell? So I think that's definitely an important lesson to pull out of this. You guys have any closing thoughts on the Amash amendment situation?
No, but just in regards to what you just said there, information is being scrubbed before it's put out to the public, and I think that's something that we need to be concerned about. So you need to look externally, outside of the mainstream media, in order to find genuine information and actual truth and find some facts that have something that's a little bit out of the box, because otherwise it's what's being placed out to you, what's being cleared to come to you before it goes from your television set or from your radio or from your, you know, whatever, into your ears, into your mind. And that's a huge, huge problem when the media is not putting out facts, it's not putting out news, it's putting out, you know, what they've been green-lighted for. Ridiculous.
So for the listeners out there, there will be some additional background articles posted in the show notes, and it's definitely an interesting thought to just mull over as to whether or not, Jay Carney and the White House were able to ice it. And using my own segue and transition, speaking of Jay Carney, my favorite White House press secretary had a horrible week again. On Wednesday,
are we going to play the game?
Well, we're going to get to the game, but first we're going to talk about Jay's misfortune.
Joe's already drunk. Joe's had one shot and he's drunk already.
Less than a shot.
He sipped half a shot and he's hammered. Look at him. All right. So on Wednesday, the Morning Joe host, Joe Scarborough, tangled up with Jay Carney in a pretty ugly way. Jay went on the Morning Joe and tried to tell Mr. Scarborough that many of these scandals that the mainstream media is pushing are phony and that they are not legitimate scandals and that it's time to pivot and focus on the economy. Now, Joe Scarborough took offense to this, saying, now, wait a minute. You know, and I'll paraphrase him, the IRS, you know, what's phony about the IRS? Are you saying that the IRS scandal is phony? And so let's listen in on this exchange from the Wednesday Morning Joe. You'll hear Joe Scarborough and White House Press Secretary Jay Carney tangling up a little bit over semantics and on whether or not some of these scandals at least are phony.
The fact is, it's far different than what you said. At the beginning, you said it was just the Cincinnati office. And then we find out more people in Washington are involved. And then this past week, we found out, despite what any of us think of the investigations on Capitol Hill, and I see you smiling, I don't know that there's anything to smile about, that it wasn't a couple of crazy people in Cincinnati, that this information actually went up to the chief counsel of the IRS, which was one of two political appointees by the President of the United States and the entire IRS. So,
Joe, I greatly appreciate that that is the line that is being pushed by Republicans who want Washington to be focused on scandals instead of the economy.
Is that the truth or not, Jay? You said, Jay, that this was limited to Cincinnati. That wasn't true.
No.
I want to talk about the economy, but talk
to
me. Don't give me talking points, because that doesn't work on this show, and you've been here long enough to know it doesn't work on this show.
Okay.
So answer my question, and then let's talk about the economy.
When you get to the question, I'll answer it. Here it is. What we said all along.
I gave you the question, and you decided to fight me, Jay. So stop your games with me. We've known each other for too long. I'm not playing your games. I'm not somebody you talk down to from your podium. Answer my question, Jay.
Joe, please, let me answer it. There is no question.
What Jay's doing here.
All right, so we're going to pause it there, and we're going to come back to this video at the end of our little discussion on Jay, because it's going to play into our favorite game on the show report. But at this moment, I want to ask you guys just about this little exchange. Is this something that Jay Carney had coming to him? Do you feel like that this is Joe Scarborough finally standing up for the press corps and saying, no, now stop, you're not going to sermonize from your podium? Or is this just an unfair exchange and a desperate attempt by Scarborough to somewhat sensationalize the situation?
I thought that he was a little over the top, and I'd be interested in Casey's perspective on this. It felt like it was a little bit forced, like he had worked it out in his head beforehand. I mean, there is no doubt that Jay Carney is one of the most frustrating human beings on the planet, and he succeeds a long line of douchebags that say absolutely nothing in that position. But he may be at the top of the douchebag heap at this point. But, you know, frustrating or not, I felt like Scarborough was just kind of faking it. I didn't get a sense of real outrage.
Yeah, Scarborough had been taking a lot of flack early in the week for rolling over for Democrats and his friends in the White House. And so I think he picked this magical moment to go ahead and feign some outrage there. There's a couple of things. If you listen to it several times, there's a couple of ways that he kind of gave Jay an out. Like, Jay, just say this and then we'll move on to the economy. Just say this and we'll move on to the economy. And Jay Carney, in his infinite dumbassery, did not take the bait. And it continued to be a you know, obviously an exchange. But there's no doubt that Scarborough was playing it up a little bit to try and let everybody know that he really is a Republican. And this is legitimate. It didn't come off as genuine to me either. But Jay Carney is perpetual job security for me.
So there's actually someone, Casey, out there that somewhat disagrees with you as far as Jay Carney with the perpetual job security. A former White House assistant press secretary, that I believe his name is Reed Sherlin, he actually is saying it's time to end the charade that is the White House press gaggle and call it quits for the briefing. He was quoted as saying the daily briefing has become a worthless chore for reporters, an embarrassing nuisance to administration staff, and a source of added friction between the two camps. It is time to do the humane, obvious thing and get rid of it altogether. That's from a New Republic article that we will link in the show notes. What do you guys think? Has the White House press briefing just become an antiquated joke that it's basically where journalists' careers go to die, or do you really, do you still think that there's value, at least in the perception of the White House disseminating information?
Casey?
I think it's valuable just because we learn so much and we get to watch people like Jay Carney squirm. The only reason it's become an embarrassment is because of people like Jay Carney. Dana Perino classed that place up like you wouldn't believe, and she gave great briefings, and it was very entertaining to get the goings-on of what's happening. But this is pretty much the first contact that the public is supposed to have when the press corps is doing their job to the administration. Hey, we learned that this bill happened last night. What's your thoughts on this bill? Or you're doing this executive order. Why are you doing this? That's what it's supposed to be. Does it turn into a charade sometimes because of the press secretary, like Jay Carney? Yeah, it does. But that's not because of the process. That's because of the person doing it.
I look back at Ari Fleischer, and I would say that he and Dana Perino were two people who handled the job well. But then you look at Scott McClelland, and you look at what was the guy before Jay Carney? Robert Gibbs, and you look at Jay Carney, and they just say absolutely nothing. They just refer you to other places, and you don't believe a word that comes out of their mouth. I mean, I may have disagreed with Ari Fleischer, although at that point in time, I may have agreed because I was a dirtbag Republican back then. Mega dittos to you, Casey. But, you know, he just says absolutely nothing, and when I look at Robert Gibbs and Jay Carney and their little smirk, you know, I just don't believe a thing they're saying, and they come off as condescending and arrogant and a little bit wimpy. And maybe that's just because I come from a family of Republicans, so I'm a little more biased probably towards against Democrats. But I just don't trust my government when it comes out of the mouth of Jay Carney at all.
I just think that the tactic was really hilarious. I mean, he's basically saying, let's not talk about the shortcomings of the administration in one area and saying, well, let's talk about the shortcomings of the administration in another area. He's not saying that they have the shortcomings, but the economy is not something that the Obama administration has necessarily been strong on. So he's trying to shift what people are actually paying attention to. But I think that if people gave it a sincere enough look, he would want to avoid the question when it came down to economic issues as well.
I would also say that sometimes the press there doesn't give enough pushback. There's a book that just came out called This Town that is getting a lot of press. And last weekend, if you listen to a lot of podcasts about, you know, weekly roundups like Slate's podcast, The Gabfest, they interview the person who does The Town. And he talks about how comfy and cushy and friendly the White House press corps is with everybody who works in Washington and in the White House. I mean, I remember watching probably a couple weeks ago when Lindsey Graham said the thing about the Olympics and how we shouldn't go to Moscow because of Snowden. And every press corps, I watched the press briefings. I don't know why I do that. It's self-flagellation, I guess. And the White House press corps just kept asking the same question. Are we going to go to Moscow for the Olympics? And it didn't matter how many times Jay Carney said, no, blah, blah, blah. They just kept repeating the question, that, and he finally just got frustrated and said, you're all being stupid. Ask me a genuine question. And you could tell that it was something that every one of them had, their news directors said, you've got to ask this question. And they didn't want to. So sometimes I don't think that the press corps is challenging enough for these guys. And I think that's one of the legacies of Helen Thomas, is she was unafraid, especially at the end, to ask tough questions, especially about Israel, but that's neither here nor there.
Wow. Yeah, it seems like Jay Carney is a tough nut to crack. I would say that, you know, even under Gibbs, that their direction comes from the top. And I think if you have a president that's truly interested in transparency, you get a press secretary that is more empowered. And when you have leadership at the top that's not really interested in being open and transparent, you get deflection. And I think that's a product of what we're seeing. And it is hard to read Jay Carney, which is the purpose of my favorite game on the Shill Report. We like to call this part, Jay Carney Said What? And
what
we do.
I'm going to come up with a theme song for this segment.
We definitely need some kind of bit or outtake for the segment. But for now, it's Jay Carney Said What? And how this works, Casey, because this will be your first time playing, we're going to take a question that was posed to Jay Carney. I'm going to provide three answers. You guys are going to tell me which answer is correct. We're going to play the clip, and we're going to see who the winner is. Who can shill with the best of them, Mr. Jay Carney? So we're going to use the question that Joe Scarborough posed to Jay Carney about the IRS scandal. I want to know from you guys, how did Jay Carney answer Joe's question on legitimate or phony scandals after the little tirade? Did he, one, say that the activity at the IRS was inappropriate, the White House took the steps necessary to stop it, and that's how the president handles things? Number two, did he say that the IRS is a phony scandal that the Republicans insist upon trotting out instead of being willing to take a hard look at the economy? It's more obstructionism, which is the last thing this country needs if job creation is a priority. Or number three, did he refer Joe to someone who actually gives a damn and refused to answer any further questions?
I'm going to go with number two. It looks like Casey is also.
So
that
Joe
would be
Casey
my answer as well.
The Republicans are benting the same old dented drum of obstructionism. Chris, where are you going?
Yeah, I'm going number two as well. It's the You're one going- that says the most but actually means the least.
All right, I'm going to restart the clip. We're going to see who the winner is.
That activity that occurred at the White House, at the IRS was inappropriate, and the president made clear that he wanted to take care of it, and he appointed somebody who's doing that.
Uh-oh, guys. It looks like it was number one this week. The president, Jay Carney, admitted the IRS activity was inappropriate. White House took steps, and that's how the president rolls. That's 2 weeks, two rounds in a row.
Well,
yeah,
where no one has been able
too.
To
What's
decide what Jay Carney is going to say. That's why I love this game.
He did say that, though, in the interview, didn't he?
He blew it, and I love it. That's why this game is my favorite.
He did say that in the interview, kind though. Of. It was just, did we get the wrong time?
Yeah, it was. It's a little trickery on my part.
Oh, that's not fair. You can't
just
cheat.
Sure
he did. Well, it was actually, Jay made those comments in the actual White House press briefing that occurred later in the day. And so while he was talking to Joe, he really tried to stick to the this is inappropriate behavior line. And later on, he went more onto the Republican obstructionism and started to beat on that drum again. I was hoping someone would go for three just out of kicks, but I got to come up with a better sarcastic answer, I suppose.
I can't wait to start like an E! Entertainment style podcast where I can point out things that we don't say on the show, like it's obvious that Jay Carney and Ellen DeGeneres have the same stylist.
Boo.
Just saying.
Casey.
Boo.
Casey is a coworker of Joe's. Joe works with Casey. Casey, is Joe known around there like he is around here for his terrible jokes?
I don't know. Are you? No, he's not.
I do my job. So I don't joke at work.
That's probably because money. The other sales weasels find him hilarious.
The audience finds me hilarious, too. You guys could use some
work. We've received numerous complaints, Joe. I need to forward them to you. Just kidding. Well, guys, that is our time, I believe. Chris, how are we looking on the clock?
Yeah, we need to wrap up and say thank you to Casey.
Well, you know what, Casey? You made the time fly by this week. We really enjoyed having you on. We hope you'll consider joining us again in the near future.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a small little fee. Involves liquor. Other than that, I'll be good.
I will make sure Joe's cabinet is completely stocked.
Yes, so we have no problem.
We will have Jack Daniels waiting for you.
He wants Johnny Walker, and next time he comes over, there'll be a full bottle waiting for him.
He's got red stuff either.
All right, black label all the way. All right, folks, that's another news cycle. Be sure to leave us a message on the We Are Libertarians Facebook page or tweet us at We Are Libertarians. Use the hashtag #TheShillReport to make sure that we see the messages you want us to look at. Find out what we left out of this episode on page 2 of the Shill Report that will be available on WeAreLibertarians.com. Listen in on iTunes or wall-radio.com to hear the past episodes. And remember, we are running a contest this week for those who are currently looking at the We Are Libertarians website. If you go to the iTunes site, leave a review, and leave us a decent comment, we will enter you into a random drawing for a $25 Amazon gift card. Get out there quickly, because next Friday we will be closing that contest out. I'd like to thank the Indiana Talks listeners for sticking with us and listening to yet another one of our episodes. Be sure to visit theburningtruth.us. Follow the link off the wearelibertarians.com website. Check out the Agamemnon store that Casey and all of us talked about. It sounds like there's some really interesting self-defense and prepper and
I'm going to
another
buy a throwing
type
axe.
Of items out there. That throwing axe looks awesome.
It looks
that
awesome.
Was the first thing I zeroed in on.
I don't even know what or who I'm throwing that, it at, but I will throw it at something. Give me this.
I can also get...
My wife is not...
I also have tons of automatic knives. As you all know, automatic knives became legal in Indiana on July 1st, so I can get those. I beat Blade HQ prices. And if there's something that you want that's not on the website, you want to see if I can get and beat a price on, just shoot me an email. I'll be happy to find it for you.
My dream of becoming a ninja.
If you have
is...
a hole in your current arsenal, check out Casey's site, theburningtruth.us. And remember, folks, when the media breaks the news, the show report is here to fix it. Good night, everyone.